Welcome to our lecture about organizational change from the perspective of complexity science. So today we're going to talk about some of the classics about organizational change, and then what happens when we bring complexity as our conceptual perspective. We're going to talk about the difference between planned and unplanned change, an increasing recognition of evolutionary processes in organizational change, and the perspective of OBM, a behavioral perspective to organizational change. So let's start with some of the bad news before we go through the good news. There's a widespread assumption that most efforts to change organizations actually fail. We hear sometimes the 70% failure rate. We're not quite sure of where this rate comes from. But what we can know for sure is that the widespread perceptions that most efforts, most initiatives aiming at a change organizations actually fail. Why so? There might be different reasons for that. It's difficult, especially when you talk about culture. Yeah, it's difficult to change culture. It's hard to make change, especially when things seem to be going well. What's the moment that we recognize that change is actually necessary? Our knowledge of how to plan and implement change is limited. Very often, the outcomes of our change initiatives are very distant in time and space, so it's actually pretty difficult to know the results of our change initiative, our change strategies. They can be pretty far in time and space. So we have started with some of the bad news. So let's briefly go a little bit of the history of organizational change as a research field. Let's talk about planned change. Originally speaking, this field was about planning change, how we actually plan change. Yeah, sometimes change happens at the individual level, focusing on training, recruitment, selection, coaching. Sometimes change is focused on at the system level, at the organizational level. Sometimes we focus on group level change, yeah? A system with goals, defining rules, clarifying group purposes, discussing and understanding decision-making processes and how we can make them more effective. Interpersonal processes, yeah, sometimes individual level, the system level, yeah. Sometimes we think about formal processes of downsizing, outsourcing, merging, acquisition, and how those major formal processes actually change work patterns in organizations, when they do, how they do. So we're still talking about planned processes and planning change initiatives. If you go through the classics, Kurt Lewin, Max Weber, Kotter, they talk about organizational change in different ways. However, they have a few common assumptions. They describe organizational change as processes of incorporating new ideas and practices into organizational life. Beyond that, they seem to be an assumption or share an assumption of system stability, that we have system stability, we have some change processes, and then a new moment of stability. So there's a movement between change and stability. What else do they have in common? There's an assumption of linearity. What do we mean by linearity? That we can see a linear history, freezing and unfreezing. So history is seen in a very sort of linear perspective, alternating moments of stability with change. Very often, and especially the case of Kotter, we're talking about cycles. There's a diagnosis, action, evaluation, further action, and a final evaluation, and then this process just starts all over again. Very often we talk about collaborative processes, but mostly we talk about top-down characters. Sometimes in the classics, and a lot of the literature about organizational change, is focusing on the role of people in central formal leadership positions, in how those people, through their behaviors and different kinds of initiatives, actually change an organization. And there seems to be an assumption that is a linear relation of between how people in formal management positions behave and how change happens. We have different waves of reactions towards classical organizational theory. We won't have time to talk about all those different waves of reactions in the context of this class. However, what's important for us is that in recent years, and now I'm talking about the past 20, maybe 30 years, we have an increasing recognition of unplanned, emergent change, evolutionary processes. That's where evolution and the unplanned, emergent, and self-organizing processes come into play. Yeah, changes, 95%, another disputable rate, but there's increasing recognition of evolutionary instead of planned or revolutionary change. We're talking now about gradual, incremental, with the potential of bringing broad outcomes. What we know about complexity, sometimes small change in initial conditions, in local interactions, can bring about major changes at the system level. Sometimes in very surprising ways, and sometimes it is already emerging before you can actually plan that. When we talk about complexity and we go through central concepts of complexity theory, one thing we learn is that we don't eliminate complexity. We work with complexity. And once we understand and identify some patterns of behavior, we may think about possible ways of influencing and facilitate change, if that's what we want. Yeah, a paradigmatic shift from physics to the life sciences as the source of metaphors to understand reality. So very often, instead of precision and predictability, we work with emergent processes and process of interactions among living beings and living agents. So here we have the metaphor of the web, the webs of interactions. Yeah, evolutionary change. Ongoing, evolving processes instead of a linear history. We're talking about a paradoxical coexistence between change and stability. It's not a linear process. We have bifurcation points where our system can go in a lot of different directions, meeting another bifurcation points, meaning that we're talking about multiple possible scenarios. We cannot quite predict what these scenarios will be, but again, if we understand the central concept of complexity, we can identify some leverage points, some patterns, and think about how we can facilitate and influence processes. It's not a logic of control, it's a logic of facilitating processes. Competitive survival. Yeah, organizations are open systems interacting with an environment. They fight for resources. And this interaction with this exchange of resources with the environment creates contingencies for how people behave in organizations. So change in environmental context very often bring about change, internal changes of how people actually behave in our organizations. Yeah, improvements, incremental change that can accumulate and generate substantial changes. Again, we're talking about emergence. Sometimes small changes in initial conditions, in local interactions, can through chains of feedbacks and positive feedback loops generate change at the system, at the broad organizational level. Yeah, recurrent and probabilistic sequence of variation, selection, and retention. Probabilistic, we're talking about the probability of different scenarios, the likelihoods of different possible scenarios. We can talk about the evolution of evolution and how it contributes to our understanding of organizational processes. So here, instead of organizational perspective focused on predictability and control, we're thinking about how we can engineer history, how we can engineer organizational history. How we do that? We have to understand networks of diffusion, webs of interactions, how different ideas, behaviors actually spread through interactions. Networks of diffusions are very important concepts when it comes to complexity. The role of space of small interventions in history, sometimes local interventions can bring about broad outcomes. And sometimes ambitious attempts to change organizational life might not bring change at all. But then how it happens? How we engineer history in organizations? We look at the possibilities for transmission, retention, and retrieval, how knowledge is distributed in organizations, how people with different expertise actually interact with one another, and what are the possibilities for disseminations of knowledge through an organization. The structure of interactions, different network structures present different possibilities for the spread of behaviors and ideas, managing the exploration and exploitation imbalance. Yeah, exploration. How do we explore new possibilities, try new things? Here we're talking about variation. Exploitation. What's the moments that we actually apply the knowledge that we already have? And what's the balance between the two processes? We know that exploration is very risky. Sometimes we don't know what's the outcome of our exploratory processes. But we also know that only exploiting the knowledge that we have without being aware of changes in our environment can also be a problem. If we don't have enough exploration, enough variation, it may be that we don't develop the knowledge and the practice that we need to cope with highly complex environments. On the other hand, if you're all the time trying new things, without incorporating the knowledge that we're generating, it may be that we're just trying new things, without really learning anything out of our exploratory processes. We have both exploration and exploitation in our organizations. Sometimes people make explicit choices about between exploring and exploiting resources. Sometimes we make conscious choices. Yeah, I think that we should make those choices conscious about when it's important to explore and when it's important to exploit possibilities. Complexity and selections and implications for organizational change. Now we are entering the field of behavior analysis. Yeah, what can concepts from behavior analysis meta-contingencies can help us understand the organizational change processes? We can think about organizations as cultural entities that change as results of two kinds of selections. We have the behavior and the cultural change. So we have two levels of change taking place in organizations. And we can think about changes at the individual and at the system level. So we can talk about selections at two levels, and we can think about organizational behavior, also individual and system level. At this individual level, we have changes in behavior as the result of behavioral selection contingencies. And what we know is that we're talking about intertwined behavior contingencies, or what we call interlocking behavior contingencies. Interlocking behavior contingencies are very important because it is through those behavioral contingencies that we find the positive and negative feedback loops that can either facilitate or restrain a change process. And those interlocking contingencies produce an aggregate product, which may be the core business of the organization or what we're actually producing for our received environments, our markets, our societies. And our environments, to a large extent, actually select our aggregate products, and changes in the environment are very likely to bring also changes in contingencies and how we actually behave, how people interact in our organizations. We can talk about maybe three levels of complexity here. The environmental component and the hierarchical level, as Glenn and Mallett tell us. When you think about environmental complexity, yeah, we're talking about the environment surrounding our organizations. We can talk about how different changes in environment can threaten or enhance organizational survival. In one simple lesson that we can take about complexity sciences is that our organizations need to match the complexity of our environments if they want to survive. They have to adapt. In order to adapt, it's important that we match the complexity of our environments. What's the component level of complexity? Now we're talking about, yeah, the number of parts that constitutes the whole. And we know that the larger the systems are, the more complex they tend to be. If you think about a mathematical definition of complexity, we usually say that the more interactions we have, the more complex our system is. How we do with complexity? I mean, we don't eliminate complexity, but we can maybe facilitate and make our system more efficient by sometimes streamline components, by eliminate redundancies, facilitate communication processes of different components, again, work with networks of diffusion, and think about possible ways through both complex and simple information can spread. And then we have the hierarchical level. We know that in organizations, we have a complex interplay between formal and informal structures. The informal structures, we have our emergent webs of interactions. But we have the formal hierarchies, and they are also important. Yeah, the number of parts, whole levels, the different hierarchical levels we have in organizations that we usually observe in formal organizational charts. Yeah, and you can think about how those different formal systems, formal subsystems interact with one another. And we have a few challenges when we analyze that. We know that sometimes organizations that tend to assume assume the form of highly structured hierarchies, there might be a distance between people in formal management positions, in top positions, and people working actually the core business of the organizations. This can be very problematic because those people, they are not exposed to the same contingencies, the same learning contingencies. And sometimes we see that in highly formally hierarchical organizations, we see people in top management positions that seem to be make decisions which are sometimes very distant to the context of those working actually in the frontiers, in the front line, and actually working the core business of the organizations. And sometimes when you have an increase in middle level management, sometimes these people might be distanced from the same learning contingencies and people in the formal management positions and people working, yeah, at the core business of the organization. About meta-contingencies, yeah, what we know about meta-contingencies, we're talking about interlocking behavior contingencies that produce an aggregate product for every system demands. So we have interlocking contingencies through that we look at when you observe different interaction processes in organizations. We have a web of interlocking contingencies that produce some kind of products to our receiving system. And there's a feedback from the receiving systems, change in the receiving system also brings change at the internal organizational level. About change, what can we say about change then? Yeah, organizations can involve change as a result of internal interrelated contingencies, which occur over time. The aggregate product, which is generated by interlocking behavior contingencies, vary over time. Our organizations are not static. They are always changing, always adapting. And there's an environment. And the environment is, yeah, in different ways, selecting those variations, internal variations, both in the aggregate products and when it comes to contingencies, behavioral contingencies. Operant behavior. So if you look at behavior at the organizational level, it means that this behavior is having some kind of consequence in the environment. So when organizations change, they also bring some kind of change into their environment. It's not only like a passive adaptation processes, but it's also about impacting somehow and bringing change at the environmental level and coevolution among interconnected systems. We're talking about systems, subsystems, clusters that coexist, that interact with each other. So environmental change happens in the process, in the relational process between different systems and subsystems. We have systems co-evolving in changing together and impacting each other's behavior, either restraining or enabling behavior at another systems and another subsystems. We cannot eliminate complexity. It's not about eliminating complexity. We work with complexity. We can manage to work with complexity by understanding rules of selection, variation, and interaction. We work in environmental complexity, and we know that we have the challenge of matching the complexity of our environments. And we can think about the sets of interlocking contingencies in their products, and maybe eliminating some redundancy and disconnects, and facilitating their interactions that actually facilitate the emergence of change in a positive change. We can think about our hierarchies. It's not that we have eliminated hierarchies, but made conscious choices about how our formal structures should be. To what extent we need the levels of management that we have, what's the moments that we should actually facilitate communication across different levels. Again, it's a process, a very complex process of interactions and connections through our formal and informal structures. Most of the time in organizational settings, people make unconscious choices about networks of diffusions, about interactions, and about positive feedback loops. But once we know central concepts of complexity and we understand interlocking behavior contingencies, we can make conscious choices and facilitate change processes and adaptation. Thank you.